Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey EU Startups, if you're running a startup like me, you have more than enough on your plate. So when a prospect asks if your company is ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliant, you're probably thinking, how the heck are we going to do this? We don't have the time, we don't have the manpower, and we definitely don't have the know-how. That's where Sitel comes in. With our automated platform and in-house expert to manage the entire process for you, you'll get compliant super fast. Compliance has never been easier.
So if you need help with compliance, visit sitale.ai/EU startups. That's sitale.ai/EU startups for $1,000 off your first framework. Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups podcast. My guest today is Hannah Leach, partner at Antler, one of the most active early stage investors globally. The firm leads in day zero investing, which is an approach to venture capital focused on partnering with founders pre-launch. Hannah, it's amazing to have you on the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Hannah, let's dive right into it. I've also had an incredible journey, but I wanted to talk about your journey. You've had an incredible journey across venture, strategy, and ESG. What's the common thread that ties it all together for you?
Oh man, this is the question that I like really grapple with, and I'm constantly searching for that common thread. I think if I was to analyze all of the things that I've done throughout my career, I really love getting things off the ground, which implies that I like to leave after that, but that's not the case. I really love kind of digging into a new problem, like understanding the lay of the land, doing the research, like mapping an ecosystem, and then kind of drawing on disparate threads to kind of pull it together into a slightly coherent narrative or initiative. I think if I look at what I did at Cognicity, launching the first startup accelerator around smart cities for Playing Wolf Group, helping EY get their fintech team off the ground, you know, working with Anthony Jenkins at 10X, all of the things I've done, Houghton Street Ventures, working to build the narrative around LSE founders, Venture ESG, building that from the ground up and understanding that there was a need in the market. All of these things have been very much at the early stages. And I then think if you map that to how I work with founders, I think that's why I really enjoy things at the very, very, very beginning, because I'm working with founders to do just that. And then I think the other thread is maybe that along my career, I've always kind of wrapped community around what I do. And I have a weird relationship with the word community. I sometimes think it's a bit fluffy. Had a weird interaction with an investor last year who kind of made a slightly derogatory comment in the context of community. But if you look at what I've done, I've built communities kind of everywhere I've gone. So some random common threads there, perhaps.
Sounds good. Sounds amazing, actually, Hannah. I had a person on the show, Madeline, actually, who told me that something inside of her dies every time she hears the word startup ecosystem. Maybe there's maybe there's also a common thread there. So you're joining Antler at a fascinating time. Yeah. What excites you most about, you know, leading the UK team and funds?
It's a big question. Yeah. And I guess I need to caveat this with like, I'm on week five, so don't ask you too much. But I've been a visiting partner for a while. I've got to know the team really well, and I love the team in the UK. And I just spent a week with the team, the broader partner team out in Singapore. And I just love the energy, curiosity, like pace of activity in the broader Antler group. It's really exciting. And of course, you know, Adam and I go way back, and maybe we'll talk a bit about that a bit later.
Question reserved for that particular topic.
Exactly, it's worth it. But there's such a big opportunity here in the UK. You know, Antler as a whole has been around for 6 years or so. They've got 18 funds in 31 cities around the world. So this massive platform, which we can leverage. But if you think about it, as in the UK, we're just on fund two. So we're just getting started. So you've got this huge platform and data and ecosystem to leverage, but then we as a fund are still in the early days. And I think when you look at building a business in the UK, everyone's quite downbeat about the UK and we're here kind of champion it, because I think there's never been a better time to build a company in the UK. You know, I don't know if you've read the report that Sequoia brought out around the UK has the highest number of engineers of any ecosystem in or any city in Europe. There's so much talent. There's a talent density. There's so many funds here, pre-seed funds, angels. You've got EIS, you've got SEIS. You've got a strong buyer appetite. You know, people are kind of already on that adoption curve when it comes to tech. So I think all of these things, when you're building your business from day one, what matter? So a founder recently said to me, he's a British founder, has just got into YC. He was saying UK is amazing for 0 to 0.5. And I think that's so interesting. I think that point is where we're great at. And I think that's what Antler does. So for me, that's where all of the excitement is.
All right. Amazing. Actually, that's interesting. So you spoke to this founder from YC. And I just wanted to ask you, do you believe London can compete with San Francisco in any way?
Yeah, I mean, the US ecosystem is much further ahead, and San Francisco has things that we don't have. But I think the UK and London in particular has a massive role to play. Like, think about the things that are important when you're getting going, right? It's getting your first customers on board. It's hiring your first few team members. It's securing some capital. UK makes that very simple. Like, you've got London, Cambridge, Oxford, Bristol, incredible world-beating universities, probably top five universities in the world are in that ecosystem an hour away. When you look at that in the US, you know, if you're building a fintech, you might be in New York. If you're building another company in San Francisco, the distances are wide. UK also in London has huge, what we call magnetism, which I feel is, again, a corny word to use. But you've got culture, you've got arts, you've got tech, you've got everything in that one melting pot, and you've got such a diversity of opinions and perspectives. And I think these are things that we take for granted when we live here, but actually for someone coming to the UK to build is really valuable. You've got the same language, you know, time zones, like you're in the middle of everything. Like there are so many things that we don't champion and talk about enough is why London is a massive draw and a massive place to kind of build your business. And obviously the political dynamics currently, you know, make that challenging, but I think there are a lot of positives to focus on.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Like London is actually a nice place to live in, whereas San Francisco probably is a great place to build a company in, but not necessarily great place to live. But any time I talk to a founder coming from Europe, but now building a company in San Francisco, they just say that it's just so way ahead, and like all the talent is there, and all the biggest funds are there. That is just, it's like if you want to big something, must be San Francisco or nothing.
I think it's also ambition, right, and energy, and I think that probably that San Francisco American energy and attitude probably is something to behold when you're there. You know, it's energizing, captivating, it pushes you, it forces you on, like it's bold, it's brash, it's all of those things that perhaps you need. And I think as a Brit, I've born here, spent my life here, I've lived abroad a lot, but we're self-deprecating. We don't shout from the rooftops, and I think there's an element of that which we need. And not, don't get me wrong, we're definitely not perfect, but I think there are many things that we should champion and talk about way more than we do.
100%. So Hannah, Antler Bags, I already mentioned the Day Zero thing. So yep. Antler Bags founders from Day Zero. From your perspective, what truly sets apart that 2.5% who make the cut?
Okay, so yeah, again, I'm saying caveating, I'm on week five, so I haven't gone through a whole residency yet. But yeah, you said that we, in the last residency last year, we got 5,000 applications for 100 places, which is pretty incredible. And it was a massive leap from the year before. So obviously, there's a lot of people who don't get onto the program. And I think over time, we've really tried to hone what that person founder looks like and why they're coming onto the program and why they should be there. I think for me, the things that really stand out, at least from the conversations I've had over the last few weeks, of the people that I think are brilliant and exceptional and should be on the program are, they're people who've really thrown themselves at things throughout their career. You know, they've executed, they've done things, they can demonstrate and speak to exactly what they've done. They've had a level of curiosity and intentionality that's kind of unmatched. And that doesn't have to be someone who's built a business. It could be someone who's worked within a corporate who spotted an opportunity and dug into it and turned it into a product. I think there are many ways to articulate that don't necessarily just mean they've been a founder before. But you can also feel like a chomping at the bit, like that urgency, you know, like they just want to get going. It's like, it's a feeling and they're like, they're ready to go. And I think they have an understanding of what it takes to go from zero to one. And I think that isn't something that everyone feels or everyone has been exposed to. But I think knowing what it takes to be pushed from the point of having an idea to building and shipping a product and also being ready for a pretty intense 10-week program. You know, it's the residency is like a pressure chamber, whatever you want to say. Yeah. Like it's, you've got to set milestones, you're ready, you've got pace, you've got energy. And I think all of these things come through. And then one thing, you know, I was going to say like knowing a market inside and out, but I've kind of changed that. I think sometimes there are some people, obviously, who are building solutions who need to know an industry, who need to know the market dynamics, who need to understand the ins and outs of it and how it works and what the incentive structures are. But then I think you also need the doers. You need those doers who can help these people execute and build their businesses. So I don't believe that necessarily knowing a space inside and out is the ultimate. And then for me, one thing that I maybe stands out more is an ability to communicate. You know, we spend our whole lives as founders communicating, whether it's to the team, whether it's to our investors, whether it's to buyers. I think the ability to communicate and be articulate, and especially in a residency program where you're trying to build teams, you're trying to come to solutions, I think that's really, really key.
Yeah, so strong communicators. That comes up very often. Hannah, so let's move slightly away from Antler. I'm not going to be asking you more questions about it. I mean, probably I will ask you some more questions about it, but I'll give you a break. So you've backed startups at, how do you call that? Like it's Houghton Street Ventures?
Houghton Street, yeah. Houghton. I always say that if you're saying it, you can say it however you like. It's just saying it that matters, yeah.
Sounds good. I like it. So you also worked closely with LSE Generate, and now, as we know, you're at Anther. What's your approach to kind of, because we know already what do you think make the great founder, make the amazing founder, but what's your approach to spotting exceptional founders?
Do you mean spotting them before they've become founders, or do you mean when we meet them and then talk to them and are like, wow, you
kind
you
of
know,
both
you're...
like you can maybe answer like how do you like yeah like where to look for them, but also how do you realize that okay, this is probably, you already said that okay, so strong communicators and so on. But so maybe how do you
respond? I mean, I guess if we, you know, at House Street Ventures, we've now backed about 20 founders across the world, India, Germany, Finland, UK, Canada, Colombia, Mexico, the US, all over, in building businesses in all different sectors. Yeah. And I think one, if I look at why I think that these founders are exceptional, is they have this like bit between their teeth. So one of our founders has been in the healthcare industry for 18 years. She's understood it from the policy side, from the private equity side, from the tech side, from the tech company side. She understands the whole thing and she knows that there's inequality there, that there's lack of transparency, and she feels it deeply. You know, she really, really feels it. And I think that if I apply that to the rest of our portfolio, most of our founders have experienced the problem at some point in their life. And they feel so strongly about solving that problem that they just get really stuck in. You know, they're obsessed by it and the ability and the need to solve and fix it. And I think that carries itself through a lot of what they do. And going back to my point about good communication, I feel like with our top founders, you can put them in any room with anyone. You know, yeah. You're safe to put them because you know that they're going to be able to explain and articulate and just naturally speak about what they're doing and why it matters to that particular audience. Mm-hmm. And they don't take no for an answer. You know, I look at the Antler portfolio from last year. There's one founder who sticks out who just doesn't take no, just pushes, hustle to the point where it's bordering on annoying, but you have to respect it so much because he's just being bold and he's asking. And he's equipping you with everything you need, but he's just asking. He's relentless. And I think these are qualities that you need even when you're tired, you know, even when you're like, you've had your 100th no. And you're like, oh man, I can't get up and do it. It's that relentlessness and that resilience to get up and do it and do it and do it. And I think those are the things that really stand out for me. And even if you're at a low point, you're running out of runway, you've got to sell that contract or close that angel. It's that ability to get out of bed, even when things are looking pretty bleak.
100%. Hannah, I love it. I love the approach. Let's talk about venture ESG, which you've co-founded to kind of drive ESG integration in VC. What's the biggest shift you've seen in the industry since 2021?
Giving a shit. Sorry, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to swear on a podcast, but people caring, people actually caring about ESG, being understanding what it means to them, what it means for their fund, why they should do it. Our community, we started almost 4 years ago. We now have about 500 funds in the broader community, about 200 pairs of membership fee. But some of the biggest funds, biggest VC funds in the world, them kind of really understanding what it means for them. Obviously, initially, it was more driven by LP attitudes and regulation, particularly in Europe. But really, it's becoming more of a view that it can act as a strong mitigator and a value driver. Looking at good governance. And we talk about resilience, you know, during COVID, when businesses weren't doing so well or when interest rates went up, seeing actually how resilience and good governance for a business was so key to its survival, I think that was an important point of reframing why these issues were valuable.
Yeah, but honestly, at least to me, from the conversation that I've been having, some VCs still see ESG as kind of a nice to have rather than a core value driver. What would be your pitch to change their mindset?
I'd start by asking them what they think ESG is. And I think that's where a lot of the misunderstanding comes in. ESG has got a really bad rep over the last however many years, right? Like, I think the public markets have not done a good job of that, but I think it's generally seen as compliance, as a tick box exercise, as this thing that they have to do. LPs ask for them to fill in a reporting template every year and they groan because they have to ask their companies for things that are irrelevant. And I totally get that. Like, that is not what ESG really should be about. ESG should really be about looking at your business. What are the most material issues that are going to drive your operational and strategic priorities over the next year and focusing on those? And if that's not important for the business, then you shouldn't be doing it. So it's a move away from this tick box compliance culture and more looking at what are the things. So, like, you know, to, if you take examples, I don't want to use, there's an example of a company recently or not so recently that released a product into the market that was unlicensed. That's just like silly. It's just like not sensible. And there's another product, which I'm not going to name the name of, that was being done last year for unlicensed gambling by the UK government. These are things that you can check off quite easily. If you have a company that has a, you know, supply chain, how are you thinking about managing that supply chain? How are you thinking about how you bring on board certain partners? How carbon intensive that supply chain is? What are you doing to mitigate that over time? You know, what are your suppliers' practices? If you're working in textiles, where do they get their materials from? What are safe health and safety considerations factored in? all of these things are not things that are extra or add on. They're just part and parcel of building a good, strong, resilient business. And I think when you break this down for funds, it comes across a lot more obviously. But I think one of the things that we're lacking is case studies. So we try and show our companies case studies, our funds case studies all the time. You know, you've got the example at the moment of Shein. I never know if I'm saying it right. You know, the fashion brand who have examples of forced labor in their supply chain. They don't have very good environmental behavior. You know, they weren't allowed to list on the New York Stock Exchange for these reasons. And who knows what will happen for the London Stock Exchange. But this is a really good reason for why a company might not do well on the public markets. You know, we're kind of hoping that maybe this will be an example, because at the moment there aren't enough case studies where the data demonstrates that integration of ESG practices actually affects your long-term growth and performance. Antler brought out a recent report which talks about companies that integrate ESG do have greater growth. The correlation is there, but it's one of a few studies. But I think we need more of these case studies. We need more data to tell the story, to get funds and companies to listen.
100%. Hannah, women represent just 70% of senior stakeholders in UK venture, and only 7% of partners. What needs to change to move the needle?
God, that's a really big question.
It is. I know.
So one obvious thing I think about is I think we have a very limited view of what makes a partner. Yeah. You know, people say a GP or a partner needs to be someone who's run 3 firms, exited 3 uniform businesses, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's a really high bar. And I think it's very restrictive. Is it really those people who can be a partner? I think we need to kind of be broader in our understanding of what makes a good VC. And I feel, you know, very, I don't know if fortunate is the word, but I've had this crazy, wonky, wiggly career. And I still, you know, Adam will say, oh, I'm Goldman, unicorn founder, turned VC. And I'm like, oh, I kind of slightly crumble in my seat because my background isn't as clear to articulate. I have moved around. I've done different things, but I still have a big role to play in the fund. So I think if we can encourage people to be a bit more flexible with how they're defining a partner, and maybe that will mean that they don't focus on these women, they focus on more women in the ecosystem. And actually, I think that could help change perception. I think also it's not just about, it's about pipeline. You know, if we're looking at where we bring where people who ultimately turn into partners, we want people, more founders and more operators. And that is a long, long game if we're going to encourage not just women, but underrepresented individuals to go into these careers. And then ultimately in 10 years, they are in a position then to be a partner. So I think we need to think about that the pipeline and how, what initiatives we might need to build here to get to this point. And also lots of people are just not long-term oriented, right? They're focused on raising their next fund. What do they need to do? And again, maybe LPs, there's a point around LPs educating limited partners. And I know there are a few examples of LPs in Germany who are being a bit more proactive with thinking about this and taking into consideration the diversity of a GP. But really, they have the power to change things. I think baby steps.
Yeah. Hannah, as you already mentioned a few times during this conversation, you're reuniting with your former co-founder, Adam French, at Antler. What makes your band rock?
What's our band rock?
Yeah.
I love the question. I said getting the band back together.
Exactly.
We've known each other for a decade. We met in the fintech ecosystem. When Adam was just starting Scalable Capital, I kind of accosted him and tried to convince him to let me sell him EY services, which he never did. I think we have a similar work ethic. We really raise each other's game. And I think there's that familiarity between us, which allows each other to kind of hold each other to account a little bit in the workplace. We can be each other's check and balance. But beyond that, in terms of actually what we bring to a fund, we're very complementary. Adam jokes that he doesn't like people, which is a lie, just to be clear. I'm gonna make that known as if he's fibbing. But he is very focused on the data. He's very focused on founders. You know, people just want to get in a room with Adam to brainstorm, to kind of do whiteboard sessions, to talk through their product problems with him, like what's their go-to-market. He's brilliant at that. It's like the founder friend. I'm, in addition to being a founder friend, I'm more the person who's going to talk to them and my brain's going to whir and I'm going to be like, oh my gosh, you speak to this person here, you speak to that person. If you're selling to this, you chat to them. How was your fundraise? Can we connect you to this? That's like how my brain is geared. It's like seeing opportunities and community and connections. And if you put the two and two together, it's exactly what we need. So Adam is amazing at the sourcing and scouting and the residency. And then I'm the one who comes in and like, oh, I can support you in these ways, connecting into the ecosystem. So if you put that team together, we make quite a powerful combo. And then Jed on the team, he, you know, he's brilliant at the coaching. Like that's his bag, is the coaching the founders and introducing a bit more of that structure and rigidity and really driving their kind of milestones and KPIs. So together we make a good team.
Amazing. Sounds great, Anna. Hannah, so with, you know, all your experience with startups and venture, what's the most important? I know it's hard, it's going to be, again, like a big question, hard to choose. But what's the most important lesson that you carry with you today?
Oh, my God. It sounds so trite. It really does. But the more and more I think about where I want to be, where I want to work, who I want to work with, who I want to back, it's people. I really believe we're in like a people business. This is, it's all about the people. It's all about who we choose to build businesses with. Mm-hmm. And I've got to the point where I don't want to work with people who I don't respect. Like if you co-invest with people who you invest in, like, you know, do you want to be stuck in a lift with someone? I mean, it's like classic thing, but I think, bearing in mind who we build relationships with, say a lot about who we are. And also how we, again, I'm sorry to say communication, but how we communicate with each other. These are the two things that have kind of that and building relationships. So I guess it's all tied into people, like who I've built relationships and speak a lot to, who's in my world now, why I am where I am. And I think, you know, those keeping in mind the relationships and the people in your life, I don't know. I just think it helps you be less transactional with how you approach things. And for me, I don't think it's about being transactional today. I think it's about thinking about what's going to come down the line.
I 100% agree with that, Hannah. I love the insight. If you could, maybe to wrap things up, if you could give one piece of advice to a founder looking to raise from Antler, again about Antler, what would it be?
Just whatever stage of the journey you're on, if Antler's coming up, if the next, you've missed this residency and you're thinking about the next one, just throw yourself in, just get going, get started, get talking to people, dig into the problem, be really clear on your head of why you're doing this. I think it's very easy to get sucked into that. Oh, I want to be a founder because being a founder is cool. And I've always wanted to be one, but really dig into why you're doing it. Why are you building this business? Why is this the problem that you want to solve? And don't just think about today and tomorrow and the day after. Think about what you want this business to be in 10 years, because it is a journey. And it's the same as raising a fund, right? Like you're doing this for the long term. Think about why you want to do this over the next few years. And be bold, like be really bold, like be big, go big, be ambitious. People can only tell you to pull it back down, but it's hard to just be like, it sounds again corny, like shoot for the biggest thing you can think of. Yeah. I think sometimes we have a tendency to be quite meek and only think of we can do this, but just imagine what's the biggest thing you could do and then work backwards. Take the jump and be brave and bold.
Amazing. I love it. Thank you so much, Hannah, for taking the time and joining me on the podcast today. I think it's going to be an amazing conversation. The listeners will love it. Thank you so much. And I hope to meet you sometime in person.
I'd love that. Yeah. Send me that invite.